Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Thank you everyone for joining us for the two exec interviews we've got right now. My name's Katie Ingram. I am Director of Advertising Week Europe. I hope you have all massively enjoyed the last couple of days, and here we are on the final day already. I can't believe it. I'm going to get straight into it because we have such a short amount of time and introduce Simon Bedell, who is the Vice President of Measurement, EMEA, at Cint, and we are going to get straight into it. This is a conversation all about measurement, and clearly for everybody in the room, understanding your audience is absolutely vital for a brand to create any effective communication strategy. But at the real core of that is being able to understand the scale of that audience. So just how crucial is it? Can you explain why it's so important to get it accurate, and then also notably to understand the kind of huge population?
That's a great place to start. I find with research, you've got to go broad, but also think about the diversity of the audience you're speaking to. We don't want to exclude any groups. We've really got to think about representativity beyond age and gender, and even gender is shifting these days. So think about diverse audiences, minorities that might not be minorities in certain areas. Think about London. So some of these that you might think is a minority is actually a majority of the population. So go big. Don't look to exclude anyone in that audience. Something we were talking about earlier in a session that I saw yesterday with Lamar and Wes, they were talking about how they think they know the audience when they're recording an album. And then they go on tour and they look out at the audience, and there's all of a sudden this older audience they didn't even know about. So don't exclude anyone, but be open to listening to other audiences that might not actually be in that sort of primary.
So I guess on that point, you understand the scale, but it would be really easy to take an obvious route. So explain why it's important for brands to kind of test and learn and understand as much as they can rather than focusing on just one area.
Exactly. Yeah, I love the phrase test and learn. Sometimes we can be a bit afraid of the learnings. Sometimes we're just testing a hypothesis and we're just looking for validation for that. And I've lifted that from Rory Sutherland on Tuesday. He talked about, you just want to have the answer proven. And he had a great anecdote about how the Persians would argue something twice if they wanted to debate it. They'd argue it once when they're sober and once when they've had a few drinks. If they came to the same conclusion both times, then they'd sign off on it. But there are some great identity provides out there that give you really good targeting for an audience. It's not a one-to-one match, though. It'll be good. You can get quite close to that audience, but don't be afraid if you haven't quite hit the mark. So if your campaign was targeting 18 to 34-year-olds, and people outside of that group saw that campaign, it's still useful information there. You might actually find that's a new audience you didn't know about, but also if they didn't have a positive opinion of that campaign, you probably want to know about it rather than just discarding that data entirely. So be open is what I would say.
So sort of learning from audiences outside the niche targeting, because you can be as targeted as you like, but you're still going to pick up other people.
Exactly. And yeah, that could be a whole untapped audience. You have to go back to the example of that older audience that's going on tour to watch Lamar perform. That's a new potential audience to go after. And we'll talk about it. Yeah.
So I think you have picked on a brilliant example of a brand who has found an audience outside perhaps what they might have traditionally been associated with. Expand on that point, because I think it's a fabulous example.
Yeah, so Stanley, I think, is a great brand. It's pivoted recently. They've been going around 100 years now. It's workwear was their primary target audience. They talked about their main users would be veteran policemen and people in the army. But now it's a real female audience embracing the quencher cup that is now so, probably at the top of most Christmas lists.
You can't even buy them.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's just massive popularity. It's this whole new audience that they didn't even know about. Another great example is, if you think about the NFL, Taylor Swift's relationship with Travis Kelce, all of a sudden the NFL's unlocked a whole new audience of females and made hundreds of millions of more dollars in advertising revenue than they had before. So don't forget about this other audience. Don't, you may have a primary, but think about the secondary.
Yeah, the knock on, the kind of the extra audiences outside. I think it's really, really strong point. So building on that, though, it would be easy to make stereotypical assumptions about the attributes of the audience demographics. So that's a really natural human thing to do. How do you stop that when it comes to planning?
This is where the use of first party data is really important. So don't assume something would link to something else. If someone drove a minivan, you might assume that's going to be a mother with multiple children, maybe a soccer mum living in the suburbs. Doesn't necessarily mean that's the audience. Patagonia, for example, if someone wears a Patagonia t-shirt, are they going to be up on the side of a mountain wearing this gear in harsh conditions? Or they might actually be someone that has a Patagonia vest working in finance or in tech or something. So,
or someone in media who happens to have a jumper that they bought, yeah.
And they've embraced that. And now Gawp Core is the phrase, and it's on catwalks. And yeah, it's beyond just hardened people up a mountain, for example.
And then that goes into purchasing as well. So you can't make assumptions about somebody's purchasing habits from their demographic either.
Exactly. A good example I've seen of this is Bill Gates used to fly economy or coach, if you're American, for the first 20 years of founding Microsoft. Just because he was in economy doesn't mean that he's not the CEO of a multi-billion dollar company. Another interesting one, I think, is that if you thought you wanted to go after CEOs or high net worth people, you might look to find them in Forbes magazine. You actually might find that Runner's World is going to be a better place to find them. That there's a reason that ING sponsor New York Marathon, Bank of America sponsor Boston Marathon, Tatkin Consultancy Services, they sponsor London Marathon. I found out 4,000 of their clients run one of their events.
Really?
100,000 of their employees run their events. So there's this massive audience beyond just the obvious of, like, let's find them in Forbes. Like I said, Runner's World may be a better place to find these people.
I'd just like to be really clear. If Advertising Week ever chose to sponsor the marathon, I won't be taking part. I'd just like to be really, really clear on that. I guess that past and future purchasing decisions are really clearly linked. But again, you can rely too heavily on that. And there's some... is it possible to untangle them? Can you sort of extrapolate them from each other?
It's challenging. The world, as we saw in 2020, can change almost overnight and things can be rapidly moving. And so the speed of research can be critical here. How do we sort of stay ahead of that or as close to it as possible? So having those answers as quickly as possible is vital. Some brands have had a tough time over it recently. Rishi Sunak was wearing a pair of Adidas Samba trainers. All of a sudden their image shifted very, very quickly. And Adidas has once had a couple of bad examples that they've got a huge stock of Yeezus trainers left over from their Kanye West link up. So yeah, someone may have purchased something in the past, but perceptions can change, the world can change. So don't just assume that something that happened in the past is going to predict the future. So that's why speed of research, staying on top of things is really, really critical.
I mentioned the Samba trainer example. We did a session with Sint presenting some research earlier in the week, and I mentioned that. I do think that is potentially one of those ones where is there really any such thing as bad publicity? I don't know. I'm not sure. I think they'll ride it out. I think they're okay.
I'm looking, like we said, a different demographic. Maybe people are that fan. So again, it could shift.
True. All of a sudden, there'll be a lot more slightly older Tory voting people buying Sambas, maybe. Who knows? We're rattling through this, but we're coming up towards the last question that I would like to ask you. You've mentioned it briefly already. It's the measurement that, or the data that is top of everybody's list at the moment, first-party data. How does it really help to stop making some of those assumptions that we've talked about, and especially in terms of kind of privacy concerns and everything that goes around it? How do we stop making those assumptions?
Accuracy, I think, is so important. Having that information, first party coming from directly from the consumer, it's vital. Like I said, assumptions can lead to incorrect conclusions. So having that accuracy of data is super important. You touched upon the privacy piece, and I think that's also critical. Again, leaning on a session I saw yesterday by Uncharted Studios, talking about keeping humans in the loop when you're using AI. AI is a fantastic tool. So don't just assume that, this came out of AI, it's accurate. And I love the idea of humans being kept in the loop. So having that human eye to look over that data, but also being involved in providing that data is really, really important. So having consent from that consumer to provide that data is going to be important. So you have to be informed, what is this data going to be used for? So handing that over is really, really critical and being part of that decision-making process. If you go to the Google Ad Center site, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but if you go there, you can see what Google thinks of you. And my profile's fairly accurate, you know, when I look at it.
Oh, I've not done that. I'm going to have to do that.
And you may well be surprised. It may think something about you that's incorrect, but for me, it summed me up quite nicely. And they're using that for personalised advertising. And again, you can opt in to that or opt out of it. You might want a more generic experience when you're using the internet and seeing ads. But like I said, it is fairly accurate, I found, for me. So I don't mind. But this is where it's really, really important. Being informed in that decision-making process. Well, we've done some research on this, and we actually found younger audiences were actually quite unaware what their data is being used for, and it's creating this personalised experience. Although it actually worked quite nicely, they actually want a more personalised experience. Older generations, I'm using broad generalisations here, which I probably shouldn't do, but yeah, broadly speaking, it was the older age groups that they're more informed, that they understand the data is going to be used, it's used for, they would actually prefer a more anonymous experience when they're using the internet. So having that involvement in the decision, it's not right for everyone. So don't just make this broad brush assumption that, right, this is right for everyone, fit for purpose. So ensure that everyone's involved in that decision-making process is my advice.
I think there's some brilliant nuggets of advice and information there. I hope you've all kind of taken something away from it. And if you haven't taken things away from this session, I'm sure you will be taking sweets away from the candy store from Cint just downstairs across the rest of the week. So please, if you've got any more questions or you want to know more about anything that you've just heard, do pop down to the candy store, sweet store. I keep changing depending on who I'm talking to, but do pop down. And a huge round of applause for Simon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we're going to bring our next speaker up to the stage. Let you settle in, Paul.
Thank you.
So for our next short, sharp interview, we have Paul Barnard, who is UK Managing Director of Audience Project. Again, we've got a lot to cover, so let's crack straight into it. First of all, set the scene. Who are Audience Project and how do you help advertisers?
Yeah, nice to see everyone. Thanks for joining. So for those of you who don't know, Audience Project is a SaaS business. We offer independent cross-media measurement platform, which essentially, I suppose, our value is to help advertisers make more confident marketing decisions, understand how they can be more efficient at reaching an intended audience and effectively kind of maximising value.
So I've been working in media well over 20 years, and I think in that time I have constantly been hearing that the media marketplace is fragmenting or getting ever more increasing options, but it does feel like that has accelerated in more recent times. So can you explain to us how and why cross-media measurement is more important now than it ever has been?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be boring and say the same thing a lot of people say, is that, you know, the ecosystem has exploded with change over the last few years. Yeah, I think if you look at cross-media, off-reach and frequency, should I say, it's always been a bedrock of measurement since the dawn of time, really, I think. But more recently, it's become a lot more prevalent in terms of advertisers have got so many more choices of where to spend their budgets. They need to kind of really get a steer on what actual value are these different platforms driving and how they kind of complement and compare with one another. So cross-media measurement is, you know, absolutely kind of pivotal in kind of achieving that insight.
So can you elaborate on the kind of proliferation of opportunities? I guess one of the most notable and most recent obvious expansions there is around digitally delivered TV platforms. So Netflix, who obviously are a partner, Peer, Prime, Disney Plus, all of those things. How has that growth accelerated the need for cross-media measurement?
Yeah, I think, you know, so the ecosystem's gone crazy, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, mainstream viewing, if we, you know, and I think take a step back, we've seen change across the whole ecosystem, but AV specifically, I think in recent times has seen more change than anyone else. You know, and mainstream viewing for decades has always been linear TV. It's what we've grown up and what we've known. Last decade or so, BVOD. But now these platforms you mentioned, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney Plus, and there's a lot more, have kind of widened the playing field for marketers, which is hugely exciting. But then also you've got to take into account all the online video that's now moving on to the main screen. So, for example, YouTube, we're seeing real growth in kind of adoption of YouTube on CTV. Then you've got OEMs, you've got the multitude of fast channels. You know, all of that is creating so much more noise and complexity. And then that's not even mentioning social media, which is a huge part of media budgets. And I could sit here and name all the other digital mediums, but that'd be really boring to listen to. But there's so much.
I'd like to hope most people know them as well. Yeah.
But there's so much to kind of navigate and understand where to put your media budget.
So how does the measurement really help advertisers better understand and, I guess, importantly, navigate their way through that change?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our clients, they're excited by what's the new platforms and the new ways to advertise and market. But I think they've got somewhat of a headache in understanding actually what these channels actually provide me. Am I just taking from Peter and giving to Paul? Where's the incremental reach? Where's the value in what we're buying, rather than it just being exciting and shiny and new? And I think that's where cross-media measurement helps, because it gives you that centralized, independent view of how those different channels perform in terms of driving reach, reaching a desired audience, how they can provide optimal frequency. All of those things are kind of hugely important. But then when it gets really interesting, it's looking at that kind of media marketing plan view and looking at how those individual channels contribute to things like total deduplicated reach. Because essentially, you know, you're buying across lots of different video channels, you need to understand that you're reaching the optimum amount of eyeballs and not just hitting the same person twice or three or four or six times just across different platforms. So cross-media measurement really helps to kind of get that view, understand where is my money going to be spent most wisely.
And so on that point, efficiency of budget is obviously going to be really important for everybody. So how does the measurement really help advertisers understand and determine the most efficient routes to their budget across the channels?
I think what I'd like to say is that reach and frequency isn't just like a nice to have stat. And I think in more traditional digital times, reach has been forgotten by a lot of that part of the market. And it's a kind of tick box metric at the end. But, you know, it's a really powerful tool to kind of help you evaluate and maximize your ad budget and understand, you know, how to shift and readjust your media investments to kind of get more bang for your buck, essentially. You know, I think there's a huge amount of money starting to shift between these new channels. For that to be done effectively and with confidence, marketers have to understand what these channels do. And like I said, in terms of delivering the desired audience, provide the best efficiency, accuracy, and ultimately return investment. But, you know, and this is an absolutely shameless plug, but I'm going to do it anyway. But
that's what we're here.
At Audience Project, you know, we offer a kind of always-on approach to measurement. And what that means is our clients measure their campaigns in flight. And that means they can understand how their media campaigns are performing. They can optimize in flight. But also, I'd say more importantly, is help kind of plan long-term media investments based on that insight.
Well, so if you're going to shameless plug, I'm going to ask you for examples, which I think is fair. What examples have you got around how the measurement can sort of compare and complement each other in terms of reaching the target audience?
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of avenues we could explore with that answer, but I think if we keep to the theme of AV, that's a really prevalent one for a lot of our clients at the moment. You know, as I said, budgets are shifting. They're looking to reach a younger audience or a broader demographic away from linear. And we're seeing a lot of clients that are trying these different CTV or digital video, whatever your kind of terminology is, with their linear plan and understanding how they complement and compare. And what we do see is that digital TV, CTV does drive a younger audience for sure. And it can be complementary to that kind of linear TV schedule. But I think what's also really important is to understand not just the audience which can be reach, but also the scale, right? And I think cost efficiency is pivotal to that. So you need to go past just looking at the total impressions served, look at what's the unique reach, what's the campaign frequency. You know, they're really valuable data points that can help drive significant value in making sure you're maximizing your media budgets.
So in terms of maximizing and optimizing, sort of taking it back to the brands a bit, what are the key questions that the cross-media measurement, how does it answer those questions for advertisers, and how do those insights then contribute to the optimization of the investment?
Yeah, I think with any media measurement strategy, you need to have really clear, concise kind of KPIs. And I think when it comes to cross-media measurement, there's four questions that you need to answer, really. That's, who is my campaign reaching? How many is it reaching? How often am I seeing them or reaching them? And arguably the most important, how do those various channels complement and compare and contrast to one another to kind of contribute to that overall goal? You know, I think if you can answer those questions, not just, you know, periodically, but consistently, then you can really get under the skin of how your media investments are performing. And that's where you can really start to kind of drive value.
And I guess there are two questions that I hear asked a lot from budgets and planners get asked a lot from their brands, I guess. So how can you sort of use the measurement to really understand how you can either reach more people with the same budget or reach the same amount of people with less budget, both of which seem to be kind of really common questions?
Yeah, we have this conversation pretty much daily in the office and with our clients, because they're one and the same, but they're very different at the same time. But I think there's two words that come to mind to answer that question. One is headroom, which I do always hear is a buzzword that's used a lot at the moment. And the second one would be wastage. I think when we talk about headroom, we're talking about using the data to understand what parts of my media plan has room for growth. So whether that's, you know, there's more reach that can be achieved from a certain platform, or we can tweak the frequency, whatever it may be, again, to make sure you're kind of driving that ROI. But I think more importantly maybe is wasted. So using that data to understand, okay, well, where's my diminishing returns here? Am I saturating my reach on this certain platform? Is this particular platform not hitting the right audience I'm looking to achieve? Is the frequency skewing too high? And I think wastage is arguably kind of, one of our advertisers says, if we can eliminate the 10% of worst performing media in every kind of campaign, we're making some really significant progress. So yeah, there's lots of different ways to look at it. You know, whether you're looking to reach more eyeballs with the same budget or to reach the same eyeballs with less budget, you know, that's what cross-media measurement can help you do.
Like you said, they're questions that are just asked so regularly. So I'm sure that's really helpful to lots of people. Last question. There is an argument that waiting for a universally accepted approach to cross-media measurement is actually unnecessary. Just crack on. What are your thoughts? Like, do you believe a comprehensive solution is already available for advertisers? Well, there'd be a lot of people in the room hoping that that is the case.
Well, you're going to be surprised by my answer. There's no need to wait for a kind of a universally accepted, you know, approach to cross-media measurement. And I think, you know, these solutions are here today, and Audience Project is absolute living proof of that. You know, we've spent best part of 15 years building a really comprehensive platform which is utilized by some of the biggest advertisers and agencies in the world, you know. And then we've operated kind of direct integrations with Amazon, with TikTok, with Netflix. We're accredited by Jixt. I mean, this work is incredibly complex, incredibly difficult, and it takes a long time to do it. You know, I think, you know, if you're going to sit on your hands, for want of a better phrase, as an advertiser and wait for something that may or may not deliver what you want or may not ever be delivered, I think you're leaving so much optimization and value on the table. So no, there's no need to wait.
You heard it here first. There's no need to wait, everyone. Thank you so much, Paul, and also Simon. Enjoy the rest of Advertising Week Europe.
Thank you. Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. stay connected with us on social media using the handle @advertisingweek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.